He swayed, leaned on me, then determinedly straightened.
I lost that knife and the butterfly cloak.
Acceptable cost, I said. I found a hogshead of water. I don't know how clean it is, Purr announced worriedly.
Water, clean or dirty, give me some.
We walked him over to it. There was a dipper hooked on the edge of the barrel. Purr filled it for him, and he drank. The next one he poured over his head and rubbed over his face. With his hair slicked to his skull, in the dimness, he looked very old.
More,
he said, and we waited for him without speaking. When he paused, Spark asked,
Besides the bruises we can see and the split brow, are you hurt?
He grimaced, showing bloody teeth, and then spat.
They hit me with sticks. A lot. Some kicking, too. Brutal, but not precise. They were reserving that for Capra's pleasure, I think. But I hope she's dead. Fitz, my hurts don't matter. We have to get to B. The last time I saw her, she was held in the upper cells, on the roof of the stronghouse. And Prilcop is here somewhere. I thought they would put him here with me, but they didn't.
He stopped to breathe, holding his ribs. He coughed, and I winced with him. I told you, Motley found her for us. I wondered how many blows to the head he had taken. He was silent. Then he said,
Of course. She should have been our first spy.
Purr thought of it, I said, and the boy grinned briefly when I glanced at him. He had dragged the guard's body away from the table and now set the chair out for the fool. I nodded at him, acknowledging his work. We seated the fool and Purr went back to the water to wash his hands and then drink. I set my attention back on the fool. We're going after her now, fool. We can't smuggle her out over the causeway. With Symph dead, the servants have shut it down. We are trapped here, unless you can find the entrance to the tunnel under the causeway. He squinted at me, trying to master his thoughts.
How did you get here, then?
We came in through the waste chute that dumps into the bay, but we can't go back that way. The incoming tide will flood it, unless we can find B and conceal ourselves until the next low tide.
Half a day from now?
He shook his head.
They'll come back for me long before that. They'll find us here.
What was your escape plan?
Butterfly cloak and the causeway.
One is gone, and the other closed. We are back to trying to find the entrance to the tunnel. He gasped a laugh.
I liked mine better. How do you know Symph is dead?
They announced it, and hung a black banner from her tower. He shook his head, and it turned to a wobble.
Not my doing.
Spark broke in.
Dawn comes. We need to go get B, now, before the castle wakes. And Prilcop, too, please.
The fool tried to sit up straighter, failed. If we can. I would make no promises. Once I had B, all my efforts would go toward keeping her safe and getting her out of here. Fool, how much can you see?
In this light, not much.
I killed the guard here. Do you know if or when others will be sent down?
I don't know. She was the only one I saw. Fitz, in hundreds of years, no one has moved against the servants. With Symph dead, my attack on Capra will have alarmed them. Expect to encounter a lot of guards.
I nodded. I'm going up after B.
They may have moved her. I know they were going to move Prilcop after they saw me there.
Well, that's where I'll start. I want the rest of you to stay here. Try to find the entry to the old tunnel, the one they took the fool out of when he escaped the first time. Now I must go.
Not alone,
Lant objected. Purr said nothing. He simply stood and came to my side.
Let me think,
the fool replied breathlessly.
We should go up one level. There are more cells there, a dozen of them, and some will almost certainly be occupied. It is their main place for torment and imprisonment. They held Prilkop and me there for a very long time. Perhaps he is there.
Unwillingly, he added,
and perhaps B is too.
I was not sure if I hoped to find Prilkop or not. If he had been as badly treated as the fool, would we be able to get him out of Clarez? A useless question. We would be unable to leave him. The stairs past the water barrel. Are those the ones we want?
Yes. The door will be locked.
Not for me,
Spark bragged. Fleet as a rabbit, she sprinted ahead of us and up the steps. I saw her bend to examine the lock, and then she rummaged in her small pack to find her picks. While she worked on the latch, I had a more thorough prowl of that level and quickly came back to my companions. If there is a door that leads to a passage under the causeway, I don't see it.
The door to a secret tunnel would be well concealed,
the fool reminded me. Unwillingly, he added,
and it may not be on this level. I was moving in and out of awareness when they freed me. Fitz, I know you think I will slow you. I know you fear for Spark and Purr, but behind that door there will be more guards, possibly more than you can handle alone.
It would be excellent if we could find that tunnel. I let his other words go by me. Purr looked thoughtful.
It would most likely be on the wall that faces the causeway.
Go look again. I may have missed something. I went to help Spark with the lock. But as I stood behind her, she gave me an annoyed glance.
I can do this,
she breathed, and I let her. I knew a moment of terrible guilt. Lant had followed me up the steps. My eyes met his over the girl's bent head as she worked with her picks. I would not waste words telling him to protect her, to protect them all at any cost. He knew. I could see in his eyes that he was as troubled as I about what we might face. The fool had stirred the hornet's nest, but Simph's death was not his doing. Accident? Disease? Or murder?
We've got it,
she whispered at almost the same moment that Purr came up the steps to gesture that his search had been fruitless. The snick of the lock surrendering seemed very loud. I held my breath and listened. Nothing from beyond the door. Time to go. I glanced at Lant. He shook his head, his lips folded tight. He would not be left behind. Purr refused to look at me, but his knife was drawn. I touched Spark's wrist and wagged a finger toward the fool. Protect him, I mouthed, and was relieved when she ghosted down the stone steps to stand beside him. He looked up at us, his pale features indistinct in the dimness. I eased the door open and motioned the others to wait as I ventured out alone. Several pot lamps burned, giving light to the central area of a chamber much larger than the one below. The fool's horrific tales were made real. There were the tables with their dangling manacles and blade-scarred surfaces. Elevated benches surrounded them on three sides. Comfortable seating for the voyeurs of the torturer's work. A pit for a fire. Beside it, a meticulously tidy rack. Pokers and pincers, knives and saws and other tools I had no names for. I had never understood the hearts of such people. Who could find amusement and arousal in the pain of another? Evidently here it was popular enough to draw an audience. It was a large room. Along one wall there were barred cell fronts. Along another more steps ascended. I had a terrifying hope. If B was here, we could break her free and get her out before the tide's turn filled the waste chute with water. It would be difficult to wade out against the incoming tide, but not impossible. I moved swiftly and silently. There were no guards, and while my wit warned me of flickering life in the cells, I sensed no one else within the chamber. I wished for the wolf's ears and nose. I could not stand the suspense. I moved closer to the unlit cells. The dim light from the central area showed me a total of 5 prisoners, all adults. They slept or huddled on straw. I ventured closer to a cell and saw Prilkop, asleep or unconscious. I went back to the door. The fool and Spark had come up the steps. They all huddled on the landing. I breathed my words.
There's no sign of B. Brilcop is in one of the cells. It seems clear. But be quiet. We need to.
There was the unmistakable sound of a lock turning and a door opening. I pushed back in among my followers and drew the door almost closed behind me.
What?
The fool began, and I quickly placed two fingers on his lips. We all froze. I could hear, but not see, the scuff of booted feet. More than three people, the muttered complaints and curses of guardsmen roused to unwelcome duty. I heard a clatter, a curse, and...
I hate this place. It stinks. Why would anyone come down here to hide? There's no one here. The door was locked. I told you no one got past us. Now can we go back to our station? I was eating.
No.
The leader's reply was terse.
You're joining us. We're to search every chamber on this level for the escaped prisoner. Rutor and his troops are searching the cottages and gardens. Kilps have taken the grounds between the stronghouse and the castle walls, and Coultry's rousing out his special lads.
Whole damn place is on edge since Synth was killed. Wish they'd done a better job on Vindalaya.
The guardswoman brayed out a laugh.
Ferb and I had the honour to toss Dwalia into the cesspit. Ferb took a piss on her. Nasty old bitch looked better dead.
The leader was not amused. Let's go. Every room on this level is to be checked and every door locked behind us. If no luck, we move up to the next level. No one gets past us.
I bet it was one of the whites did Dwalia. Those little snakes had no reason to like her. And Synth? I think she was an accident. I heard they did some work on Vindalaya to try to get the truth out of him. He was chained there. He had to have seen what happened. They should just make him talk. I wouldn't mind watching that.
Let's go. Their leader was plainly annoyed with the chatter and dawdling. The footsteps moved off. I waited until I heard a door close. The fool spoke three words into the silence.
Dwalia is dead.
I could not read his sentiment. Was he glad or less fearful or regretful that he had not had the chance to be present at her death? Maybe all those things or none of them. Prilcop is in a cell in there and three others.
He may know what they did with B. He was caged beside her.
Those were, perhaps, the only words that could have made me delay for him. Lant, take Purr, guard the next door. I know they locked it. It doesn't mean they won't be back. Spark, fool, with me. I eased the door open, and like shadows, we moved to our targets. I gestured to Prilcop's cell, and Spark and the fool hurried to it while I seized one of the pot lamps and brought it over. I did not want the other prisoners to wake, nor did I wish to free them. They were factors beyond my control, and I already had too many of those. As Spark went to work on the lock on his cell, the fool softly called,
Prilcop, wake up!
The big man had been curled in a ball, his arms and hands coiled protectively over his head. At the fool's second call, he dropped his hands and lifted his head. One eye was swollen shut, and his lower lip was as fat as a sausage. He stared. Painfully, he uncurled and set his feet to the cell floor. As he shuffled toward us, I heard chains clank.
Where is B?
I demanded of him. His good eye found me and wandered over my face. He gave a small nod to himself.
The unexpected son. But I expected you.
He coughed out a small laugh.
The upper cells were where I saw her last. Is this another rescue?
It is, I turned. Behind me I heard him say,
I hope this one is better than the last.
As I moved away, he called more loudly than I liked.
There are others up there in those rooftop cells. Free them.
Fitz,
Spark whisper shouted after me. Free him. Then search for the hidden tunnel. I'll be back with B. I didn't wait for their objections. I crossed the room at a run.
Give me some space,
I whispered to Lant and Purr as I drew out my own lockpicks. It was dark, but shade had made me practice endlessly by touch. I wordlessly thanked the old man as I probed, pushed, and levered until I heard the satisfaction of a latch giving way. "Stay back," I warned the others. Again, I eased a door open and peered out. It was the guard's chamber. A table, four chairs, dice abandoned beside a half-eaten peach and three cups. I slipped into the room. There was fading warmth on the chair, and the fruit looked freshly bitten. I went back to the others. "Come, but quietly. The guards from this chamber were called away. I fear the whole castle is alerted. They're searching for an escaped prisoner." Another door, another lock, but I picked it quickly. Again, I cautioned them to wait and eased a tall, heavy door open. I peered in both directions, down a long, curving corridor with many doors. There was no one in sight. On shelves at intervals, fat lamps burned some fragrant oil. All was calm. It was jolting to step from a place of bars and torture and bored guards into a gently lit corridor, panelled in a white wood I'd never seen before, the floor meticulously clean with framed portraits on the wall. It was like stepping from a nightmare into a dream. I weighed my plans. I was not cheered to know that all doors on this level would be locked after the guards had searched each room. If we had to retreat to hiding, there would be nowhere to go. One by one, we slipped out. I led the way. Purr was behind me, with his short sword out. Lant came last, sword in hand. I carried my knife in my left, and the ship's hatchet in my right. My pathetic invasion force challenging a fortified stronghold. But there was no other choice. The corridor curved gently away from me in both directions. At wide intervals, there were tall double doors covered with decorative carving. All was quiet. I recalled what the fool had told me as we created our map. The ground floor would be audience chambers and waiting rooms and private greeting rooms for very important guests. There were several stairs to the next level. I chose to go to the right. I tested the first two doors we passed. Locked. I hoped that meant we were following the patrol. But if they turned back this way, we had nowhere to hide.
"What's that sound?" Purr demanded.
"I don't know." It was a muttering, an uneven roar. Lant was looking up, Purr behind us. I had no time to worry about it. "We have to find B." I led them on. We were like rats as we ran, hugging the walls. Rounding the curve in the corridor, I saw the staircase. A pale grey fog was drifting down it. I slowed, stared, and then smelled it clearly. Smoke. Now I understood. Above us was the roaring laughter of the fire on the upper stories. I heard distant shouts and cries of fear.
"She's up there," I said, and ran.
I took the stairs two at a time. On the first landing, Purr passed me. I lost sight of him in the turning of the stairs. I sheathed my knife, hooked my hatchet in my belt, and followed. I heard the slapping of footsteps, coughing, and a woman wailing. Four people passed me, racing down the stairs.
"Fire!"
one shouted at me as he passed. Behind me, I heard Lant shout and assumed they'd collided with him. What had been a haze became grey, stinking smoke. A dozen more steps, and the smoke was strangling me. My eyes streamed. I stumbled, went down to my knees on the steps, and found slightly cooler and cleaner air. I pressed my sleeve to my nose and mouth, and crawled three steps higher. It was only smoke. How could it stop me? I reached the top of the stairs. There was a landing. Past it, more steps. I couldn't see Purr. B had been on the rooftop. I continued my upward crawl. Where was Purr? I halted, chest pressed to the last step before the landing. To my left was a corridor thick with smoke, cloaking the dark orange glow of a fire. I put my arm across my mouth and breathed through my shirt. Squinting, I made out flames licking a panelled wall. I heard a pop, followed by the sound of falling crockery. Fire skated toward me, gliding on oil as if it were ice. I recoiled and felt a body under my hand. "Purr?" I gasped. I heard shouts above me, panicked cries for help. Someone trod on me as he staggered down the stairs, and two others followed, coughing and blindly stumbling over me. Choking on smoke and desperate to escape, they cared nothing for me or the boy sprawled on the steps. My eyes streamed so that I could not see, and the air was becoming too hot to breathe. I shook Purr.
"Help me!"
he gasped hoarsely.
"Bee,"
I groaned. If she was up above us, she was likely dead. I wanted to surge to my feet and try to run up those stairs to her. Was she trapped in a cell as smoke choked and flames roared? Dead already? I wanted to die trying to reach her. If I left him, Purr would die. I seized his arm and crawled backward down the steps, bumping him along behind me. It took more strength than it should have. As the smoke lessened, I saw that Purr had a tight grip on someone else. A child, a young wight by his garb, that Purr dragged with us. I gasped in a breath. The smoke in my lungs choked me and fought to be released. A shape reared out of the haze and seized Purr's other arm. Lant.
Down, he gasped.
Together we thudded Purr and the unconscious child down the remaining steps. When we reached the ground floor, I tumbled onto the floor beside them, barking out smoke. I rolled over onto my back and wiped my sleeve across my eyes. The smoke was not gone. It crawled along the high ceiling of this corridor as a thin grey mist. Lant knelt beside me. He would wheeze in a breath and then choke it out. Two other people clattered and staggered down the stairs. A woman exclaimed at the sight of us. The man, leaning on her, said,
"We must get out!"
They left us, hacking and gasping as they ran. Purr and the child were tangled on the floor between Lant and me.
"You idiot!"
I wheezed at Purr and then choked.
"Move! Crawl! We have to get back to the others and then get out of here!"
Purr coughed, opened his eyes, and then closed them again. When he didn't respond, Lant and I staggered to our feet. We dragged them laboriously away from the stairs. When the sound and stink of the fire on the upper stories faded behind us, we halted. Lant and I both sat down, panting cleaner air into our lungs. The top floors would all be ablaze now. Would the stronghouse collapse on top of us?
"We have to get back to the others," I said dully.
Our quest to save B was over. We had to get out. I staggered upright again and stooped to seize the front of Purr's shirt.
"Get up,"
I ordered him. Purr coughed and tried to stand up.
"Bee,"
he gasped.
"Gone."
I spoke the horrid truth. "We can't get up there. I doubt she's still alive." My eyes were already stinging and running from the smoke. True tears mingled. It seemed an impossible cruelty that I'd come so close to her and then failed.
"Bee!"
Purr cried out and rolled free of my grip. It unbalanced me and I fell. I had never known that smoke could so disable a man. I crouched on my hands and knees, wheezing. Purr tugged at the unconscious child he'd dragged down with us.
"Bee, I've come to save you,"
he said faintly. Then his words shattered into coughing. The child's clothes were scorched and smudged with soot, and his face disfigured by scars. The flesh around his closed eyes was thickened like that of a veteran brawler. There was a scar on his left brow and a split from a more recent beating at the corner of his mouth. The marks spoke of a short life best left behind. Then the boy opened his eyes, and B looked at me. We stared at each other. Her mouth formed a word that her breath could not push.
"Da?"
So small, so scarred. She lifted her hands toward me, and life surged through me again.
"Oh, Bee,"
I said, and had no more words. I reached for her and pulled her to me. Her arms went tight around my neck, and I held her close.
"I will never leave you again,"
I promised her, and her grip on me tightened. I rose onto my knees, Bee still clasped to me. Purr staggered upright. He was weeping.
"We found her. We saved her,"
he said. You did, I told him. With my free hand, I seized Per's upper arm. Lant, come on. I stood and made a staggering run, dragging poor stumbling Per and jouncing Bee's face against my collarbone. Lant caught up and took Per's other arm. Jogging along, bumping into one another, we fled the smoke down the long, gently curving corridor until suddenly my head spun and I crashed to my knees. I managed not to drop Bee, but Per fell beside me and Lant went to one knee.
Oh, Bee,
I managed to say. I lowered her to the floor. She was gasping spasmodically, as if she had nearly drowned. Her eyes had closed again, but she lived. She lived. I touched her face as Per scrabbled over to us.
Bee, please, he said.
He looked up at me, and as if he were a very young child, he pleaded,
Make her be alive. Heal her.
She's alive, Lant assured him. He leaned on the wall to stand. Then he stood over us, his sword in his hand again. He'd protect us. She stared up at me, wordlessly. I shook my head, too heart-stricken to find even a word for her. My finger traced the line of Molly's jaw, touched her mother's mouth. She coughed, and I drew my hand back. No, this was not the little girl I had come to rescue. This scarred and beaten creature was no longer my Bee. I did not know who she was. Still small for her years, as young as I had been when I had begun to act on all Shade had taught me. Bee Farseer. Who was she now? She rolled her head to look at Per, her breath wheezing in and out.
You came, the crow said.
Her words trailed away.
We came to find you,
Per assured her, and went off into another coughing fit. He reached over and took her hand in his.
Bee, you're safe now. We have you.
None of us is safe, Per. We have to get out of here. No time for reunions and apologies. No time for tender words. I lifted my eyes. I looked up at the paneled ceiling above us and the massive beams that supported it. Wood would burn, but stone did not. Fires always climbed. We might be safe on this level, at least until the heavy timbers that supported the stone scorched and flamed. Where were we? Had we passed the door and the stairs to the lower levels? We had to find them. Perhaps they'd found the tunnel. If not, we had to fight our way out before the whole stronghouse came down on us. I coughed again and rubbed my cuff over my streaming eyes. Time to move. We have to go, I told Per. Can you walk?
Of course I can.
He staggered to his feet, then bent over, hands on his knees, to cough for a long time. I watched him, and slowly it came to me that I knew where to go. I knew where to get help. I had that moment of utter relief one has when the obvious solution to a problem becomes clear. It seemed ridiculous that I had not thought of it before. I came to one knee and lifted Bee carefully. She did not weigh much. Through the loose garments she wore, I could feel her ribs and the knobs of her spine. I stood. I began to walk, and Per straightened and staggered along at my side. Lant sheathed his sword. I glanced at him and saw that he, too, felt the same relief. I smiled to see that Per held his knife out and ready. I knew we would not need it.
My brother, where are we going?
More welcome than cool air or fresh water was the touch of night eyes on my mind. I felt my spirits lift, and suddenly I knew now that everything would be fine.
Where have you been? I cried out to him. Why did you abandon me? I was with the cub. She needed me far more than you did. But once she learned to raise her walls, I could not escape them. My brother, where are we going now? Why are you not running? Where is the scentless one? I know a place of safety. I know people who will help us. I saw them, revealed by the gentle curve of the corridor. A troop of 12 guards, weapons drawn, was coming toward us. Spark and Prilcop were with them,
guarded on all sides. The fool hung limp between two guards. Leading the way was a small, stout man with a toadish face and bloodshot eyes. A tall, old woman hobbled along behind him, clasping her side, and two men, one garbed in green and one in yellow, walked beside her. I smiled to see them, and the small man's face broke into a grin. He motioned the guards to halt, and they did. They awaited us.
Vindalaya, I am astonished, the old woman said. You are truly a wonder.
You should never have doubted me, he replied. My brother, this is wrong. This joy you feel is false.
I am so sorry,
the woman apologized to their leader.
From henceforth, you will be honored as you deserve.
The men nodded agreement to that, their faces wreathed in doting smiles.
Fitz, what are we doing? They will kill us!
Per shouted. Bee lifted her head from my shoulder.
Papa!
She cried out in alarm. Hush! It's going to be all right, I told her.
All fine,
Lant echoed me.
No! Per shouted the word. No, nothing is all right. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with everyone?
Papa, walls up, walls up!
My brother, they deceive you, I laughed.
They were being so foolish. All is well. We are safe now, I told them, and carried B toward the welcoming party. Chapter 35 Confrontations. I am B, and B is me. My mother knew this from the beginning. Sometimes, at the beginning of a dream, I see myself. I am a bee, gold and black, shining, like sparks and charcoal. As I fly, my colors grow brighter and brighter, as does an ember when one blows on it. I am so bright, I illumine places that are dark, and in those places, I see the important dreams. Dream Journal of B. Farsia. It felt like a dream, the simple sleeping kind, in which one dreams of what one wants most. First Per and then Father were with me, dragging me away from smoke and flame. Per spoke to me, and I heard the voice of my first and only true friend. I've come to save you. The words I'd been longing to hear someone say ever since that wintry night at Withywoods. I could not breathe for smoke, and I could not see him, but I knew his voice. But then, magically, it was my father bending over me. He touched my face so softly. Then he picked me up, and he was carrying me. I was safe, safe in his arms. He would protect me. He would take me home. He carried me, and I knew his swinging stride from when he had perched me on his shoulders. I put my face into the angle of his neck and smelled strength and safety. His hair was greyer and the lines in his face deeper. But this was my Da, and he had come to find me and take me home. I lifted my head to smile down at Perseverance. He was taller than he had been, and he looked stronger. He carried his knife before him, as my father had taught me a knife should be carried. He turned his head and looked up at my father.
Fitz, what are we doing? They will kill us.
Then the dream became nightmare. My father carried me toward Vindalaya, not just walking, hurrying, as if he could not wait to get there. Capra, Felidy, and Coltry walked with Vindalaya, and all of them were smiling. Capra clutched her belly, and a slow leak of blood showed on her garments, but still she smiled. They were so pleased with Vindalaya, so certain they had won. I stared. Did they know of my fires roaring two floors above us? I suspected not.
Vindelire had gathered them and brought them here. They knew only what his will was, and his will was my death.
Papa!
I shouted at him.
Hush!
He patted my back.
You're safe, Bee. I'm right here.
I had held my walls so tight and so strong for so long that only now did I touch them and feel the force beating against them. I allowed myself to hear Vindelire's lure.
Come to me. Come to us. Everything will be well. We are your friends. We know what is best. We will help you.
And my father was believing them.
Papa, walls up! Walls up!
I shouted the words desperately as I wriggled to get out of his arms. He looked down at me, and slowly a furrow grew between his brows. I think he was starting to realize what Vindelire was doing to him, but he was doing it too slowly. I kicked free of him, fell as I hit the floor, stood up, and pulled his big knife from its sheath.
Kill her!
Vindelire shrieked as he saw me seize the weapon.
Kill Bee now!
Not only his voice, but his magic pushed that thought, and the eyes of every person advancing toward us narrowed with hatred as they looked at me. The guards drew their swords, and even Capra drew a little belt knife. I looked up at my father, fearing to see that he, too, would have been turned against me by Vindelire's magic. But instead, I saw a terrible blankness on his face. I turned to face them, alone.
No!
Perseverance pushed me to one side as he charged forward. Not for an instant did he hesitate. The full force of his body was behind his knife as he drove it into Vindelire. Both went down, and Perseverance planted a knee on Vindelire's chest. I saw Per's elbow draw back and then punch the knife forward again. Vindelire's terrible pain burst in my mind, edging my thoughts in red. His desperate magic leapt in a new direction.
No! Stop! Drop the knife! No! Don't kill me! Don't hurt me!
So powerful was that sending that my father's knife fell from my suddenly nerveless hands. I was seized with the necessity of not hurting Vindelire. But no such compulsion stilled Perseverance. Vindelire's magic did not touch him. He stood up, drawing out the bloody knife as he did so, and shouted,
No one will kill Bee while I live!
He had grown stronger than the boy I had known at Withywoods. The terrific slash of his blade had the force of a swinging axe. The edge crossed Vindelire's throat, and blood flew out in an arc as it ripped free of his flesh. As Vindelire's magic failed and stilled, Per sprang back. He spun to stand in front of me, knife lifted in one hand and the other pushing me protectively behind him.
Behind me, Bee!
He commanded. Chaos broke out in the force facing us.
Why are we here?
Capra wailed, while Felody danced backward into his own guards in his desire to flee.
Where?
My father shouted and took a great stride past us. He stooped, snatching up the knife I had dropped. He had a hatchet in his other hand. He drove himself into the ranks of befuddled guards. He was suddenly among them, using both knife and small axe against their swords. I saw him hook a man's blade with the hatchet and force it down, while he thrust his knife into the man's unguarded throat. His only hope was to be closer to them, inside the thrust or swing of their blades. His face was alight, his teeth bared, and his eyes brighter than I had ever seen them. Per remained between me and the melee.
Stay back,
he warned me, but I cried, They are too many for him. We must help him, or we will all die. They were engulfing him as if he were a boot sinking into mud. In the back of their force, something else was happening. I heard a woman screaming, not in pain, but in fury, as her filthy curses rang out in the hall. A man's deep shouting cut through her words.
Drop him! Let him be!
Simph's knife. I scrabbled to get it from under my shirt, then ducked under Per's arm and went for Felody with it. The great coward had turned away from the battle and was trying to get past the knot of fighters and flee. Perhaps I was as great a coward, for I tried to drive my knife into his back. The short blade skittered down his ribs as if they were a pole fence, and then found a soft place below his short ribs and above his hip. I sank the blade as far as I could, and then seized the haft, with both hands and shook it from side to side. I accidentally pulled it free as he jerked away from me. I was much better at biting than knifing. Then Coltrane hit me. His open palm slapped the side of my head with tremendous force, and my crumpled ear roared at me. Felody was crawling away from me, making short, sharp shrieks. I turned to face Coltrane.
"You dirty little traitor!"
he shouted at me. Madness was in his eyes.
"You killed Simph, and you killed poor dear Dwalia!"
Vindelire's body was twitching on the floor behind Coltrane. I sprang at him, leading with my knife. He retreated to avoid me, stumbled on Vindelire, and fell backward. He kicked at me as I jumped at him, a glancing blow that still pushed me sideways and made me lose some of my breath. But I paid no attention to his flailing, slapping hands. I would put my knife into the middle of him, into his belly where coiled the parts he needed to live. Wolves always tore for the belly. I hit him too high. His breastbone stopped my blade. I pulled back my knife, and with both hands on the hilt, I drove it down again as he battered me with slaps. He wasn't very good at it. Dwalia had hit me harder than that. My knife punched into him. I leaned on it, trying to push it deeper. Coltrane grabbed my hair with both hands and pushed my head back. My head was not my hands. I dragged the knife as he shoved me away. The cracked paint on his face made him look like a ruined doll. Then someone else's knife carved across his throat. He didn't know he was dead. His lips writhed away from his bared teeth, and I lost some hair as I ripped myself free of him. I'd almost forgotten the other people fighting all around me. Purr had hold of my upper arm and was dragging me back, shouting, "No, Bee! Stay clear! Don't get hurt!" The knife in his free hand dripped red. My father was still engaged with the three guards that were trying to take him down. He was bleeding. Somehow, he had gained a short sword, and his snarl was a joyous thing. Felody was still trying to crawl away. The guards had dropped the man they'd been carrying. The black man, Prilcop, stood over the fallen man, weaponless. Between those two and the remainder of the patrol, a man and a woman stood back to back, and the man was Fitzvigilant. Lant was alive. A strange thrill ran through me. Was it all going to come undone, all my hurt and sorrow? My father had come to rescue me, and Perseverance was alive, and Lant, too. Was it possible to hope for Revel? Did I dare? Then a sword licked in and sliced into my father's thigh. He roared his fury, and it did not seem he could be hurt, for he swung his own blade so forcefully that it cut into the man's side almost to his spine. He jerked the blade out as another man cut at his head. He ducked that blow. "Help him!" I screamed, but Perseverance dragged me back. "He can't fear for you," he shouted, and for a fleeting instant my father's glance flowed over me. Then I heard Capra screaming.
"Guard me! Guard me! Leave off and guard me!"
She had broken free of the melee to lean against the corridor wall, clutching her reddened belly. The five standing Clara's warriors abruptly sprang back from their engagements and formed up around her. She clutched at one of them, and he took her weight, helping her hobble along. The others kept their faces toward us, a bristling wall of blades. Capra stumbled, and the warrior picked her up. He carried her like a child as they backed away from us. Felody howled at them to help him, and one of the guards seized him by an arm, pulled him to his feet, and dragged him off at a staggering run. My father stood, panting, his bloodied blade slowly drooping toward the floor as they retreated. Lant started to go after them, but the girl cried,
"No, let them go!"
And he listened to her. Capra's retreat saved us. As the curve of the corridor hid them, my father tottered sideways. Purr left me and went to him, easing him down to the floor. My father was cursing furiously, clutching at the blood that welled between his fingers. I ran to him. Purr was tearing his shirt off. It was the wrong kind of fabric. I wriggled my arm out of my sleeve and held it out to him. "Cut this off to use," I told him, and after a shocked moment, he did.
"Bee!"
Lant exclaimed as he came to my father. He looked down at me, and I looked up at him. His face was freckled with blood. I didn't think it was his. He looked as if he felt ill, and I thought I knew why. "You wanted to kill me, didn't you? It was Vindelire's magic, not your fault.
He could make people believe things, even me. My father spoke in a thick, tired voice.
It was like the skill, but not. Magic used in a way I've never experienced.
I heard him swallow.
How could he be that strong?
They gave him a potion made from serpent spit. It made him very strong. I could barely hold my walls against him.
I couldn't hold my walls if it hadn't been for perseverance.
I felt nothing, Per said. I thought you had all gone mad, he muttered almost sulkily. He knelt by my father. We should cut the clothing away from this.
No time, Lance said. That fire is spreading.
He knelt and took my sleeve from Per and wrapped it snugly around my father's thigh. He knotted it tight, and I heard my father groan. The sleeve went red. Then the girl I didn't know came to us, Beloved limping as he leaned on her shoulder.
They're gone. They ran away,
she was saying to him. Blood was running from the corner of his mouth and his face was lopsided with bruises. But all he said was,
Bee, you're alive.
He reached for me with claw-like hands, one gloved, and I shrank away.
Bee, he won't hurt you,
Prilcop said quietly. I had almost forgotten Prilcop.
He would never hurt you,
he repeated quietly.
You are his.
Beloved turned his gloved hand toward me, palm up.
Bee!
My name was all he said, in a slurred voice. I drew back from him. I can't. He makes me see things when I touch him. I don't want to see things anymore. And it was true.
I understand,
Beloved said sorrowfully, and dropped his hands.
Bee, he has a glove on one hand,
Perseverance said very gently. He has come a long, far way to rescue you. His voice reminded me of a long-ago day when he had said, Shall I ready her for you? And saddled the horse I was afraid to ride. But I was not that little girl anymore. I looked aside. I saw my father's expression. I was still holding Simph's knife. I wiped the blood from it and put it back in the waistband of my trousers. Slowly, I reached out my hand and set it on the back of Beloved's glove. I gave you an apple, I said quietly. Do you remember that? His mouth shook.
I do,
he said, and tears welled and ran down his face.
Oh, Bee, what have they done to you?
Lant asked me. His eyes were moving over my face. My scars sickened him. I didn't want them to speak of that. I didn't want them to ask me questions about any of it. I looked at the dead guards scattered in the corridor. Blood was pooling around the corpses. The girl was moving among the bodies, looking for something. I saw her take a sword from a dead man's hand. Coltrey lay on his back, covered in blood and unmoving. I'd helped to kill him, and I didn't care. I hoped Felody would die too, and in the far parts of the castle I still heard screams and crashes. Fire stops for nothing. Was I truly the destroyer? We need to get away from here, I reminded them all. Didn't they understand that we could not stand here? I set fire to the libraries. It's spreading.
The libraries,
Beloved said faintly. He looked devastated as he stared down at me.
You burned the libraries of Clares?
They needed burning. Burn the nest to kill the wasps. My speaking my old dream made his eyes go wide.
The destroyer came,
Prilcop said quietly. Beloved looked from me to my father, and then back to me.
No, not her.
Yes. I pulled my hand back from touching him. He would not want to know me now.
Bee,
he said, but I went to my father. I put my hand on his sleeve. We have to get out of here now, if we can. My father was trying to stand up. He gave me a crooked smile.
I know. We need to be moving. But first, are there any more like Vindalaya?
He was the only one, I think. They said they did not have much of the serpent potion left,
but I think they lied to one another about that. Could they make another Vindaliya?
Serpent potion?
Beloved asked. He had drawn closer to us, and Prilkop stood beside him. Prilkop spoke in his low, deep voice.
I have heard rumors of this. Is that what they gave to Vindaliya?
It is made from the concentrated secretions of a sea serpent. There is an island where dragons used to lay their eggs. The eggs hatched into serpents that wriggled into the sea. Some very peculiar creatures live on that island. Sometimes they capture a serpent or two and hold it in captivity. I was watching my father. He put a heavy hand on Lant's shoulder. His expelled breath made a horrid sound as he forced himself to rise. At first, his foot did not touch the ground. Then he set it deliberately to the floor and tested his weight on it. The red on his bandage darkened.
We need to get out of here. The fire will consume the upper stories first, and then it will all fall on us. We need to get outside, and then off the island.
It may not fall,
Prilkop suggested.
The bones of this strong house are stone, and it has stood through many a calamity. It is not the first time fire has visited here.
My father did not seem to be listening to Prilkop, so I ignored him as well. We started walking. I stayed close to him. My father expelled a harsh, short breath with each step on his bad leg, but he led us. Slowly.
You should leave me behind, he said. Take B and run for the doors.
Run straight into their guards?
The girl asked him.
We aren't leaving you,
Per said quietly.
Sir, is there a way out of this castle, one that won't be guarded, or packed with fleeing people? She asked Prilkop. She glanced down at my father's leg as he limped along and said to me, We will need your other sleeve. Prilkop shook his head.
This strong house was designed to be easy to defend, not to escape. There are only three entrances. Those who have escaped the flames will flee down the main stairs and go to them.
I pulled my arm into my shirt and offered the girl the limp sleeve. She cut it off as we walked, her knife sliding easily through the fabric. Wait a moment, she told my father, and he halted. She knelt to add another layer to the seeping bandage on his leg, and a brief snarl passed over his face.
Let's go, he growled, and limped on. How do you get in to Clarys?
Prilkop asked curiously. He walked beside my father. Beloved walked next to me. I think he wished to hold my hand, but Per was doing that. Then he let go of my hand. I'm going ahead, Per said quietly. I don't like that we can't see around the curve here. The fool will take care of you, and Spark, and Lant. He put my hand on Beloved's gloved one, and I let him. He sprinted ahead of us, staying close to the inner curve of the wall. I looked up at Beloved. He looked down at me and offered a cautious smile. It rippled his bruised face. I could not smile back. I let my eyes follow Per.
We came in by the waste chute on the low tide. It will be flooded with water now. No use to us until late afternoon. I don't think the fire will give us that long.
Lant asked Prilkop, Do you know of a concealed tunnel under the causeway? The fool believes he was taken out of Clarys that way. We were moving, but not swiftly. The scattered bodies of the fallen guards partially blocked the hall. Our bare feet left bloody footprints on the formerly pristine floor as we left the battle behind us. Per was ranging ahead of us, staying close to the wall and trying to peer around the curve of the corridor. He held a short sword in one hand and his knife in the other. He reminded me of a small hunting creature. I wondered if I was as changed as he was. When he went out of sight, I caught my breath. I wanted him back right now. Beloved was limping, his other hand on the girl's shoulder. She held a looted sword and a knife. You're bleeding, I said to her. She didn't even look at the slice on her forearm. It will stop, she said quietly. She smiled at me. Hello, B. I'm Spark. I came a long way to meet you. Prilcop was talking. The tunnel is old, built when an emperor first constructed Clares and severed the peninsula to make it an island. When I was a boy here, it was not a secret. In those days, the servants lived simply and had no thought of needing guards or a secret escape route, and it wasn't used. I know that Beloved was taken out through that tunnel as much to avoid Capra knowing as to maintain the pretense he had escaped. He looked at Beloved as he added, "They took great delight in telling me what they had done, how they had crippled and maimed you to make every step an agony. Even so, they knew you would go to him. They trailed you, like slow hounds, not to help, only to keep you from failing. You know that now, don't you?"
"I guessed it then," he said in a low voice. "But I had no other path."
He was the one who had led them to me, and now he held my hand. I saved that bit of information.
"The tunnel under the causeway?" Spark prompted Prilcop impatiently.
"It's very old. It dates back to the creation of Clares as an island. The emperor who constructed it wished to have a secret egress in case the castle was besieged and falling. When they cut away the land and pared down the peninsula to make Clares an island, they cut a trench in the stony earth and roofed it over, and then built the causeway over it. When the tide covers the causeway, it may leak or fill. I don't know. It's considered a secret now, and not spoken about." He smiled grimly. Spark scowled.
"But is it at a higher level than the way chute, or lower?"
"Higher." Prilcop shook his head. "It was years ago that they released Beloved. It may be collapsed now. After Beloved's escape, Capra was so furious that she had it bricked up."
There was a smile in the girl's voice as she said, "Bricks will not stop us, if you know where it was."
We heard a distant crash behind and above us. We all flinched. My father limped faster. Beloved's voice was soft and flat, with a sort of dread.
"Prilcop, how is it you know so much of what has been going on in Clares?"
The black man gave a bitter laugh.
"I did not betray you, Beloved. Once you were gone, they believed they had all they needed and were finished with me. Hence the better lodgings and cessation of torture. They took my dreams as I wrote them down. Several times they tried to induce me to contribute to their breeding program. My dreams and my seed were all they valued of me. One of the night guards was assigned to seduce me. Instead, we became friends. She gave me news, but only what she knew of Clares. The Four do not encourage news of the outside world here. For the whites born here, Clares is all they know."
Purr came sprinting back to us, panic on his face.
"We cannot escape this way," he whispered hoarsely. "Ahead is a grand staircase. People are running down it, and crowding at the bottom and milling like corralled cattle in the room before the outer doors. There is no escaping that way. The main doors are locked. I could not get to the front of the mob, for folk are trampling and pushing and hurling themselves against the doors." He gasped in a breath. "I ran past them down the next corridor, but there I saw a troop of guards. They were opening each locked chamber and searching it. I think they are looking for us. They saw me, but I raced away from them. They didn't follow. I think they thought me just another slave, but they will come this way soon."
I spoke as he drew breath.
"They are seeking me. Vindelire said he had burned it into their minds. They will not stop until they find me and kill me."
For a long moment, none of them spoke. The sounds of the fleeing people came faintly to us. Purr sheathed his knife and took my hand. My father spoke, but he sounded like a different man, one who thought only of what must happen next, without emotion.
"Fool, lead us back to the dungeons."
It was Prilcop who spoke. It is two doors ahead of us, on the left, and I must go there too. We left the other prisoners still locked in their cells when Vindelire sent his magic to draw us to him. His voice dwindled away. My father sounded impatient. And down there is the bricked-up entrance to the causeway tunnel? Yes, it is also there, on the lower level. We need to get there and secure the doors before the guards come. Run! My father ordered, and we did, but only as fast as he could limp. The moment we reached the second door and Lant opened it, Prilcop darted in and disappeared from sight. My father seized Lant's shoulder. Lant, secure this door and the one to the lower level. Barricade the steps with whatever you can find. Purr and fool, guard B with your lives. He unslung a harness from across his shoulders. It had pockets with little pots in them. He removed two of them. Spark, take these. Have Prilcop show you the bricked-up entry. If nothing else works, blast it open. Get B back to the ship. He put the little pots into her arms. She cradled them like a baby while looking up at him wide-eyed. B, listen to Lant and the fool. Obey them. They will get you to safety.
But Fitz,
Beloved said in a broken voice, there's no time to argue. Keep your promise to me. My father's voice was the harshest I'd ever heard it. Beloved's gasp sounded like a sob.
Papa, I said. I held to the cuff of his sleeve. You promised me. You said you'd never leave me again.
I'm sorry, Bee. He looked at all of us. I'm sorry. Get inside. Hurry. But at the last moment, he reached over and set his hand on my head. I do not think he knew what would happen. The touch broke our walls. I felt him. I felt his disappointment in himself. He did not feel he deserved anything from me. Not to touch me, or even to say that he loved me. For he had failed so badly at being my father. It stunned me. It was like a second wall beyond his skill walls, something that prevented him from believing that anyone could love him. Wolffather spoke to both of us.
You would not feel so terrible if you had not loved her so recklessly. Without limits, be proud of our cub. She fought. She killed. She stayed alive.
I felt Wolffather leap from me to my father. I heard his parting words.
Run, cub. We stand and fight like cornered wolves. Follow the scentless one. He is part of us. Protect each other. Kill for him, if need be.
As the wolf went to him, I felt the surge of joy that linked those two. They would stand and fight, not just for me, but because it was what they loved to do, what they had always loved to do. My father stood a bit straighter. They both looked at me from his eyes. Puzzlement and pride. And love of me. It poured out of my father as uncontrollable as the blood seeping from his wound. It drenched me and filled me. He lifted his hand from my head. Did he know how he had revealed himself? Did he understand that Wolffather had been with me all those days and now returned to him? Almost gently, he peeled my grip from his cuff. He spoke.
Please, Lant, take B. Take the fool. Take all of them. Get them safely home. It's the best thing you can do for me. Hurry.
He gave me the softest of pushes, away from him. He turned away from us, as if confident that we would obey. He turned and began to limp away.
Why?
I shouted at him. I was too angry to cry, I thought, but tears came anyway.
B, I'm leaving a blood trail that a child could follow. Purr saw guards coming, searching rooms as they come. I will be sure they find me before they find you. Now follow Lant.
He sounded terribly tired and sad. I looked back the way we had come. His bloody footprints were plain on the once clean floor. He was right, and that only made me angrier. Lant stood by the open door.
Purr, Spark, take them. I'm staying with Fitz.
No, Lant, you won't. I need you with them, to be a sword, to protect them, and to use your strength to barricade that door. Beloved didn't move.
I can't do this,
he said in a very soft voice. My father rounded on him.
You promised,
he roared. He seized the front of Beloved's shirt and pulled him close.
You promised me. You said you would choose her life over mine.
Not like this,
Beloved wailed.
Not like this.
Abruptly, my father seized him in a hug. He held him tight as he spoke.
We don't get to choose how it happens. Only that you save her, not me. Now go. Go.
He pushed him away.
All of you, go!
He turned and limped away from us. His hand left bloody prints on the wall, and his footprints were red on the white floor. He didn't look back. When he came to a door, he halted. We stood in frozen silence. I saw him take something out of his pocket, watched him fuss with the door handle. After a moment, he opened it. Just before he slipped inside, he glanced back at us. He made an angry motion and mouthed,
"Go!"
at us. Then he was gone. I heard him lock the door behind him. Of course. If we were hiding in that room, it was what we would do. There was blood on the floor outside that door, his bloody handprints on the wall and the door. The guards would think they had us cornered. "Get in here," Lant said in a dark and savage voice. He took my shoulder and pushed me toward Beloved. I tottered numbly along with him. Purr came beside me. I heard him sob once. I understood. I was crying too. As the door began to close behind us, Purr spoke in a hoarse voice.
"B, I am sorry, but I am the only one Lant won't need. Spark must set the fire pot. Prilcop knows where the tunnel is. Lant is strong and good with a blade. And the fool promised. And you... saving you is why we came all this way. But me? I'm just a stable boy with a knife. I can stay with Fitz and help him."
He sniffed.
"Spark, quickly. Come back to that door and unlock it for me."
"Lant?" she asked uncertainly.
"Do it," he said harshly. "After all, he's just a stable boy."
He cleared his throat.
"A stable boy who killed Duke Ellick to save Fitz's life. One who stood beside him when Fitz faced down a queen dragon. Go, Purr. Be sure he knows it's you. And when you've killed the guards, bring him back to us. Two knocks, then one, and I'll open this door without trying to kill you."
"Yes, sir," Purr said. He looked at me. "Good boy, B." I hugged Purr. It had been a long time since I'd hugged anyone. It was even stranger to have someone hug me back so gently.
"Thank you for killing Ellick," I told him. "He was a terrible man."
"You're welcome, Lady B," he said, and his voice shook only a little. Prilcop was waiting for us.
"The lad is terrified," he objected.
Lant spoke. "That's because he's as intelligent as he is brave. Go, Purr."
"All this talking," I heard Spark mutter angrily.
"Purr, hurry."
But as she turned, she reached up and touched Lant's cheek. Then they left us. I stood beside Beloved in the dim room. Overhead, something fell with such a crash that the ceiling shook and bits of paint flaked down. He looked down at me and spoke so softly.
"The Destroyer."
I could not tell if it was a compliment or a rebuke. "Go down the steps," Lant said in a low voice. He closed the door behind us.
Chapter 36. Surprises.
"No, I cannot agree with you that this work should be left to others. You and I, we are the only two with the necessary depth of knowledge to understand and correctly classify the skill cubes. In an excess of caution,
Skill Mistress Nettle has removed from my safekeeping the sack of memory cubes I myself brought back from Aslevyal. She has given them over to a young journeyman and a team of apprentices. The task she has assigned is that the apprentices should briefly sample each cube, both to teach them how to use a memory cube, and also to teach them the restraint needed to enter the skill flow and then to exit from it after a limited time. Each cube is then to be classified as to what it holds, be it music, history, poetry, geography, or another branch of knowledge. Each cube will receive a designation so that they can be kept in order. I consider a brief time in each cube to be inadequate. You and I both well know that a poem can be a history, and a history can be a flattering fabrication to tickle a ruler's vanity. You and I are the only ones who should be experiencing the cubes, creating clear pages that summarize what they hold and then storing them in order. This is not a task to be left to inexperienced apprentices, and sampling the cubes before storage and classification is inadequate. I understand that the information they hold is vast. Even more reason that each cube should be explored completely by people with a broad base of knowledge.
Shade Fullstar, in a letter to Tom Badgerlock of Withywoods. I latched the door behind me. Then I leaned against it. Why had they made it so hard for me? Did they think I wanted to do this? To leave B yet again? I did not mean to slide down to sit on the floor, but I did. It hurt, but it probably hurt less than falling. I was light-headed. My body was demanding that I rest, that I sleep. After so many years, I was familiar with its aggressive healing. All my body's attention and resources were going to the slash on my leg, just when I needed to be alert. How bad was it? It's bleeding less. Don't poke it. Where have you been? I heard myself whisper the words. With the cub, doing my best to help her, mostly failing. She is alive. That means you succeeded. She would be safer if you went back to her. She is safer if we draw off the hunters and kill as many as we can. I had held back three of Shade's firepots for myself. I reached over my shoulder and took out the cracked firepot that I'd mended, put it back, and chose the other two. One had a blue fuse, long and slow, Spark had said. I wasn't sure I wanted it to burn slowly. I wasn't clear on what I was going to do with them. How slow was slow? I knew the guards would come. Make all ready. I looked around the darkened room. It was small, perhaps for private meetings. There were two small windows set high in the wall and no other door. A watery grey light told me that outside, dawn was breaking. As my eyes adjusted, I saw a table with two comfortable, high-backed chairs around it. In the middle of the table, there was a little pot lamp made of glass and painted with flowers. A lovely, welcoming room. An assassin's dream. I got to my feet, not quickly and not without curses, but I did it. I set my pack on the table and opened it. The folded paper of Caris seed was on top. Very little left. I dumped it in my hand, tossed it into my mouth, and ground it between my teeth as I set out the firebrick. The heady rush of the Caris seed flooded me. Good. I drew the wick most of the way out of the lamp and set it on the firebrick. It warmed immediately, and soon the wick began to smolder. Someone tried the door handle. Out of time. I'd planned to have the lamp lit, ready to light the fuse. Instead, I uncoiled the fuse from the firepot and set it on the brick. Almost immediately, a tiny spark danced on it. A flame leapt and then died back to a steady red glow. The lock rattled once, then turned. I slid the brick along the fuse and lit it closer to the pot. Then I stood. Almost. I leaned heavily on the table. The sword wasn't long enough to be a walking stick. I put more weight on my bad leg. It folded under me, and I caught at the table. One can ignore pain, but when the body invokes weakness, determination is useless. I hopped and lurched toward the door. I wanted to be behind it, out of sight when they entered. They'd come in. I'd close the door and keep them there until Shade's little pot gave up its lightning. I made it to the door just as it opened a crack. I leaned against the wall and held my breath.
Fitz? It's me, Purr. Don't kill me.
He stepped in, with Spark peering over his shoulder. I had no time to curse at them. I lunged for the firepot at the same moment that Spark saw it. As I toppled like a cut tree, she stepped past me, slid the firebrick from under the fuse, and flipped the brick over. She evaluated the fuse on the pot.
We have enough time, she said. Pick him up, Purr. We'll backtrack in his blood and be away from here before it goes off.
She nodded to me. It's not a bad plan. She seized one of the chairs and dragged it so that the back blocked the view of the table from the door. Nothing for them to see to warn them. Let's go. I tried to think of a reason to argue with her. Purr already had my arm across his shoulder. He stood, dragging me up with him. The lad had grown stronger. Spark poked the firebrick and then picked it up.
It's cooling already, she said. Elderling magic, amazing stuff.
With swift efficiency, she resettled it in the pack. I started to object, but she held up the unlit firepot.
I'm not stupid, she said, and set it upright on the cooled brick.
She slung the pack over my shoulder.
Go, now.
We went, though not as swiftly as I would have wished. I leaned on Purr and hobbled. Spark inserted herself under my sword arm. She was barely tall enough to take the weight off my bad leg. She drew the door closed behind us.
Wish I had time to lock it, she muttered.
My heart sank as I saw the next door open and Lant put his head out. Spark made an impatient motion of her hand and he closed it softly. I tried to move faster. The rhythmic slap of running feet.
Drop me! Run!
I ordered them. No one listened to me.
Hurry!
Purr suggested. Spark glanced back.
No! Stop and face them!
No! Purr objected. But she held my arm tight to her shoulder, and I found myself pivoting on my good leg as she spun me around.
What are you doing?
Purr cried out.
Trust me,
a hissed whisper.
Swords up!
I lifted mine with an effort. Get clear, I warned Purr, and at last he obeyed me. I could not walk, but I could balance, somewhat.
Else balls!
Purr's voice went guttural.
They have bows!
Of course they do. Spark laughed darkly. They halted well out of sword range, a dozen of them, tall, well-made warriors. Four with bows, six with swords. Their leader barked,
Capra wants the man taken alive. Shoot the other two.
Run,
I suggested.
Get behind Fitz,
Spark said, and seized Purr to drag him in as she stepped behind me.
And hold here. She whispered. Not much longer. Hold! Hold! Hold!
The archers were fanning out and advancing. I would not block their arrows for long. They would kill Spark and Purr.
Hold! Hold!
Whispered Spark. The door and the wall leapt out at them as I flew backward, landing on my companions. In the next instant, the ceiling came down, scorched wood and some stone. A blast of heat and stinging dust struck me, blinding me as the roar numbed my ears. My face felt burnt. I dragged a sleeve across my eyes and blinked, expecting to find enemies charging. I still couldn't see. Tears streamed from my eyes. I sat up slowly as Purr and Spark squirmed out from under me. The hazy corridor held only the shattered wall and collapsed ceiling and the smoldering beam that leaned across it. I felt a rain of fine debris. Spark said something.
What? That worked well,
she shouted. I nodded and found a stupid grin spreading across my face.
It did. Let's go.
Purr helped me up. His face was reddened from the blast, but he managed to smile. I felt something sting the back of my neck and slapped it. I brushed a dart away, looked at it in surprise, but Spark was already screaming.
Where? More of those bastards! Swords up!
Shade's firepot blast had deafened us, so we had not heard the patter of running feet. A dozen guards had come up on us from behind, completing the pincer movement I had feared. Four in the front line raised brass-bound tubes to their lips. A blast of those horns would summon more guards. Kill them first. Fight like cornered wolves, I agreed with Night Eyes. I raised my sword, and Purr and I lurched toward them, roaring as the trumpeters puffed their cheeks. But before they could sound their horns, another fall of burning ceiling drove Purr to his knees and sent me hopping sideways. The guards wavered as a rush of heat rolled past us, and I heard no blast of horns. Was I that deafened? But I felt a tiny impact, and I looked down to see a dart dangling from my vest. Spark shook another from her hair. It fell away as I hopped in, sword feebly swinging. My blade bit into one before I staggered sideways and fell. Purr leapt to stand over me, thrusting and yelling. Spark charged, shrieking as she attacked. The door to the dungeon swung open right beside them. I roared my dismay. They'd betray themselves. We'd all die. But it was not Lant who came out, blade in hand, but Bee. She pointed her knife at them, but that was not her weapon. She widened her eyes and stared at them.
Go away, go away, go away. Be scared, run away.
Verity's strength, without his wisdom or control, I slammed my walls against her wild,